Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm not sure what take this is, but damn, there's been a lot of recordings of this intro today. It's very noisy in my flat today. There's people outside screaming and hollering, so I'm currently got my head in the wardrobe. Maybe I did last week like this, but you know, I'm sort of perched between some shirts in an attempt to muffle out the outdoor noises. Also, I broke one of my microphones, sadly, so this is a replacement. I think you won't notice, so I don't need to tell you, but anyway. Should I just start the podcast now? Yeah, just maybe tell them who the guest is. The guest? That is a good idea. This week's guest is Syriac. Syriac is an animator whose work you've seen. I guarantee you've seen it. If you've been on the internet at any point in the last 10 years, you've seen his work. If you follow me on Twitter, you've seen his work. Looping, evolving, beautiful, kind of scary animation that I personally have found pretty much awe-inspiring. So getting the opportunity to sit down with Syriac and just talk about the stuff we talk about in the next hour is a treat for me. And I'm hoping it will also be a treat for you. Yeah, see, I care, people. Couple of things before we start, though. This is the first one where I made a huge mistake while recording. Basically, Syriac has a book out called Horse Destroys the Universe, and although I put it in my notes, I completely forgot to ask him, which was dumb. And as I was packing up, I realised this, and I thought, let's just quickly sit down and get a little bit about the book. So we did, and we talked, and then I hadn't pressed record. So, big boo-boos on my behalf there. But if you're interested in the book, it's Horse Destroys the Universe by Syriac Harris. And you can find that on unbound.com. He had the rushes and everything literally on the table in front of us. So, yeah. I'm kind of glad I made that mistake, though. It was all going too well. Like, 5 episodes in and I hadn't forgotten to press record once. Anyway, definitely go check out the book. Jump onto Syriac's YouTube, his Twitter. Hit all the thumbs ups and the likes and the hearts and the doodads you can. And then remember to thank me, because you're about to have your mind blown. Okay, now we have to do the horrible bit. The bit I hate, the plugging. This podcast is funded through Patreon. I want to do as many of them as I can in person, which means travelling and getting in their living rooms. And without the Patreon support, I don't know that I could do that. So, to all of you who already support, genuinely appreciate that. It blows my mind that anyone bothers. And anyone who fancies throwing the podcast a dollary do to keep it making this quality content. Can you not hear it in my radio voice? This is quality content right now. It's patreon.com/DanAsaf. In podcast news, next week's is the last one I have recorded. So hopefully I'll be able to have got a couple more episodes recorded in the meantime. But typical artists are very difficult to pin down with times and places and such. So fingers crossed there won't be any interruption to our weekly schedule. But if there is, it'll only be a week or so gap, hopefully. Anyway, I guess we should get on with the conversation right now. That's what you're here for. You're not here for the ramble. So here we go. Fade it in, Dan. And then fade this out. No, fade this out first. There you go.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Syriac. Is that how I pronounce that?
That's how it's pronounced, yep, Syriac.
So you were somebody else who won't tell me how to pronounce his name, a guy called Rob Bestcheeza? Bestcheeza, who is an editor on boingboing.net.
Oh, I think I know the name now.
He makes really nice warped photoshops of like Donald Trump, but his mouth is also his eyes. Like his mouth is where his eyes should be and stuff.
Oh, as
that you are the internet itself. You are the actual internet trying to communicate with us in a way you think we understand.
Maybe.
Which is like, to describe your work, like as a, you're an animator, but it's the easiest description.
Mm.
But then to actually describe what you do, you start getting into, well, like this video, it's like a fleshy Rube Goldberg machine, but if MC Escher had access to Adobe After Effects, how do you describe what you do?
God, I don't know. I've written it down so many times with interviews, because it's something people always ask and I have to think about it, because I don't think about it.
Yeah.
And when I'm doing it myself, I don't think, yeah, this is, I'm going to do it this way because I'm into doing surreal geometry, mathematical, whatever. I just do whatever I want to see.
It's, yeah.
It usually starts off with just a completely ridiculous idea. And then I have to kind of make it happen, because if I don't, then I'll never, nobody else will. That's basically the reason I do anything, is because these are things that won't exist unless I kind of make them.
Yeah. See, this is a really honest answer. Like, these are the things I want to see. Mm. And I feel like...
Animation is just a kind of a handy medium I use for that. I don't particularly, I mean, I'm technically an animator, but I just use whatever medium to create these kind of worlds or stories. I mean, before I did animation, I did comic strips. I did kind of illustration and painting. And
so the illustrations on the wall are kind of fractal geometry.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I've always been interested in with everything I do, I guess. It's the rules that generate the world around you. And they're kind of, you can distill them down to a very simple mathematical premise, but they'll still spawn all this complexity when you keep iterating them and stuff.
Like the things on the wall couldn't exist without a ruler, maybe a protractor and a compass.
Well, I actually did that one without any rulers.
Show off.
Which was just a kind of, just a personal challenge, really.
You can't see this because this is audio, but there's circles and cogs and...
It was inspired by Haynes car manuals.
Okay, that's a really good description, actually. That helps. Haynes car manuals are amazing.
They are, honestly.
He passed away recently, I think.
Oh yeah, the guy. Yeah. And when I saw that, I thought, God, you know, I don't really know anything about the people who illustrated those magazines.
Yeah,
those books.
I didn't even think about it that Haynes was like the guy's name, or that was somebody's creation.
Those books have been around for so long. I just assumed that he'd kind of been and gone a long time ago.
Yeah, it's funny that there are things that are created that have existed in your life so long that you can't even process the idea that the person who created it is still kicking around.
Yeah, yeah, well, in these days, I don't know, every week there's somebody new dying.
Mm.
God, there was one today, the guy from Prodigy.
Keith Flint, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a double difficult one because of it being, it was suicide as well. And like, I know we're not going to, we said we're going to avoid like politics, but we live in a time where we're still trying to come to this terms with the idea that men have emotions. You know?
Yeah.
And like his generation is he's 49, I think.
Mm.
So I'm only 9 years younger than them. I think you're about the same age as me.
I'm kind of halfway between you and him.
Yeah. So we're that generation that is starting to come to terms with the idea that you're allowed emotions and feelings, but this idea that boys don't cry is still like really part of society, and we might be able to move past that eventually, but it comes with the price of accepting that men actually have
weakness
and yeah, accepting the idea that you're gonna fail, which is weird. I'm gonna try to bend this back to the podcast right now before I start, but but it's something to do with creating, you know.
Mm.
Like, a lot of... I imagine you have hundreds of failed projects. Unfinished ideas, things you could never quite make blossom into the thing you wanted.
Well, anything that didn't work is just a step towards something that does work, you know? So I've got... I wouldn't say I've got a box full of failed, half-finished crap in the other room. I'd say I've got a box full of potential ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of that I can keep pulling out every now and then, saying, well, this could be good if I did this, that, or the other, you know.
And I suppose, like, what every success you have, success in air quotes, i.e. something that's finished enough for you to think of putting it into the world, is another chance for one of those abandoned pieces to go, well, hang on, if I apply this idea from project A to project old.
I mean, I've got videos that on my YouTube channel that came from ideas I might have had like 10 years previously, and they've just bounced around inside my head all that time until I thought, well, you know, I haven't got any other ideas at the moment, so I better pick out one of these old ones and do something with it.
You mentioned YouTube. Obviously, your career doesn't exist without the internet? Is that fair to say?
And it's weird because before I discovered the internet, I didn't even think about computer. I didn't even use computers until I...
Because you did a more traditional animation.
Yeah, well, I went to college back in the late 90s, and computer animation was a thing back then, but it was still kind of early days.
It was still expensive as
and,
well.
Yeah, and there was still this kind of idea of animation being a tradition with, like, hand-drawn stuff or stop motion, and it's all very kind of hands-on, like a craft. So that's how we were taught. And then I left university with a degree and found that I didn't know what to do with it because everyone was like using computers and I'd never even used a computer. And yeah, it was just total accident really that I'd kind of been signing on for a while and they said, "You gotta get a job, mate, we're not going to give you any more money." So I just took the first job I could get, which happened to be using a computer which happened to be connected to the internet.
And what was that job?
It was data entry for a website, which kind of...
So fulfilling then?
Oh, God, yeah. But I mean, I totally lied on my CV about how I could use computers and Photoshop and
it's the best Word way.
And stuff. And then the first day I got there, they had to show me how to copy and paste and stuff. But yeah, I picked it all up.
You picked it up quick enough not to get fired.
Yeah, and then not only that, they started giving me other work, and eventually I was like, because it was one of these jobs where you had to tidy up artwork now and then, so I'd kind of get to learn how to use Photoshop. And then I started messing around with photos and things just for the fun of it. And then I noticed that you can actually make little animations in Photoshop, so I'd just be doing that for the people in the office for a laugh. And then I started looking at the internet and finding these websites where you could post pictures and things. And
like a beta and
things like that. And so I thought, well, I could have a go at doing that. I may as well put these animation skills to some use. Because, I mean, without that platform of the internet and the medium of the computers provide, I mean, what other option did I have as an animator? I'd be like scribbling on bits of paper in my flat for months and months.
Yeah.
And then what would you do with that? You'd have to take it somewhere to get filmed and processed and then take it around animation festivals or whatever.
Yeah.
And the alternative to that would be going off and working in an animation studio, working on somebody else's ideas, which is something I didn't want to do. So I was kind of stuck not being able to do anything until computers gave me a really easy way of doing it.
But that, like, people will, like, when I started making music, like, I was doing my A-levels, and it wasn't actually an A-level in music, it was just this, like, I think AS level or something, like a one-year thing.
Oh, right.
And there was this kid... I'm not going to say his name, but he was like, "Oh, it's just button pushing, mate. It's just, like, meaningless button pushing," while he's holding his Fender Strat and just doing covers of Jane's Addiction. It's like, I don't know why you think covering somebody else's work is more valid than me creating something new, but I'll let it live. And, like, now, I see him, like, posting. It's like, "Yeah, I dropped a new beat. I'm DJing tonight." And it's like, "Wait, but I thought it was just button pushing." Like, the mechanics of making something shouldn't devalue it.
Yeah, right. I mean, the tools make it easier, which just means more people can have a go. And there's a lot of people out there like me who are far too lazy to learn how to play a musical instrument.
You've mentioned before, I don't know, I've listened to a couple of things and read a few interviews. I think that's called research. I don't know. Mm. I'm a professional. but you mentioned before that, that attraction was like, well, I don't have to draw this thing. I can just take a photograph of this thing and then start.
I mean, for me, it's always been, I have these ideas and I've got to act on them quickly, or I'll just get bored and move on to something else. So I need the easiest and quickest way of doing something that I can get my hands on, which is the main reason I started cutting out photos and moving them around, just because it's quicker than drawing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I used to draw stuff, but it takes you years. I mean, I have such admiration for animators who do hand-drawn stuff. That is just way beyond my patience.
Yeah, because yeah, it's the decision is almost set in stone. If you go back and look at Akira, the cinematography of that is in whoever they chose that shot. That storyboarding, everything, it's almost like once you've committed, you've committed.
Mm.
Whereas for something more in the digital realm, you're like, this angle's not, this cropping's not quite right, this angle's not quite right. But you have that ability to, oh, but I can change that,
yeah,
rather than having to, I don't know, just, oh, well, I've just wasted 500 hours.
Yeah, fuck. And I mean, I guess there is a kind of a charm that you get with, I mean, if you look at something like stop motion animation, where you can't exactly go back and do it again if you mess up. So you might have a few, like, dodgy bits.
But claymation's still the pinnacle.
You might see a few
animation
thumbprints and stuff. But it's, I guess that you, when you can see the craft, you can see the hands of the artist involved, I guess that kind of adds something to it, which maybe you don't get if it's all very polished. I mean, I kind of get the feeling that that's what some people like about my stuff, is that it has that kind of hands-on feel to it, because it kind of evolved out of the cutout animation tradition, where you get people like Terry Gilliam cutting out photos of things and moving them around, and it always looks kind of very rough and ready. And I think there's a, I think that people see that in my work. I'm always like thinking, man, I spent ages on this. I make it all kind of nice and smooth and stuff. But then I'll occasionally get someone messaging me saying, hey, did you do this advert for so-and-so? It looks like your stuff. And they'll show me a link and I'll look at it and think, oh my God, this is terrible. I really think my stuff looks like this.
That's kind of jumping to two separate points, like natural segues for podcasting. We can even talk about the amount of stuff you've done, because you've done a lot of outside of your personal work, if we want to call it. You've done a huge amount of work. Or we could talk about plagiarism.
We can talk about whatever you like.
Oh, let's just talk about both.
Yeah.
So McDonald's.
Oh, right, McDonald's.
Stealing.
Yes.
Potentially, I don't know what litigation went on.
They're probably not too kind of involved in any of those kind of decision
ad agency somewhere.
It's something that ad agencies sometimes get up to. And I mean, I've worked for ad agencies and I know people who've worked for ad agencies, and it's just how it is. You'll get somebody there who sees something on the internet that's popular or interesting, and they'll say, oh, that's given me an idea. And my idea is to just use that idea and make an advert out of it.
So for people who don't know, Syriac did a video, which is probably the video that a vast number of people have seen of yours, called Cows and Cows and Cows.
Cows.
It has a life of its own as such. Yeah. It seems to be heavily shared, you know.
Yeah.
Not that you haven't got a shed load of people seeing your work, but that one in particular seems to...
That's the one people... It really triggered something in people's minds for some reason.
Yeah. But it's cows dancing, yeah, essentially, warping.
I think it's just one of those things where it's made of such simple ingredients that it kind of... It instantly burrows into people's heads.
And the McDonald's advert is just essentially your video with different cows.
Yeah, I mean, but I've seen them do that with other people as well.
Yeah.
And it's not just them, it's other adverts do this. And sometimes the ad agency will get the original artist involved.
Well, that's the thing, like, you didn't get asked. And I never understand that idea. Like, I want something like... I want Paul Weller to sing this song for me. All right, what should we do? Let's get this guy who sounds like Paul Weller. Yeah. No, just ask Paul Weller. If he wants too much money, then get that guy. Like, why an agency didn't think, I'll just Google Syriac, see if he's got a... Oh, look, I'll just email him.
Yeah, and some of them do. Yeah. Like, you know, and sometimes I can help them out and sometimes they can't, and then they get somebody else to do something like work. What I do. But... with some of them, it's just how they do things, where they say, right, we want you to make this advert, and we want it to look like, and they'll give you some reference materials. Mm. And you might then show them something you've come up with yourself, and they say, well, can you make it more like this reference a bit more? And they'll keep asking for little changes until it's basically you're just remaking something that somebody else has done.
Mm. Which must be frustrating. Because it's like, well, why did you ask me in the first place?
Yeah, and it's kind of annoying for the original artist, because, I mean, in an ideal world, advertisers and artists have this kind of symbiotic relationship where they both help each other out. Like, one of them gives the other one work, the other one gives the other one content, and everyone's happy. So yeah, it just upsets things a bit when you get plagiarised.
Yeah,
but you get used to it, I guess.
It is really odd to me. My thing is that annoys me is that they think in this day and age that we'll get away with it. McVitie's did it too. they copied a Beardy Man. Beardy Man is a beatboxer.
Yeah, I know Beardy Man.
Yeah, he's basically in the kitchen and he's mixing a beat. It's a really silly video, but it's cute, and it's Beardy Man being a performative beatboxer rather than a looping beatboxer, which is what he does on stage. And it's just a good skit. And then McVitie's just go, oh no, we'll just take that and make it about biscuits with a different guy. And it's like...
That amazes me, because that is, I mean, that's like a product that they're using that somebody else has made.
It's not even like, if you look at his original video on YouTube, it's only got 4 views, no one's going to notice. It had like hundreds of thousands, if not millions of views.
There's no getting away with it in the age of the internet.
Yeah, which is a good thing at the same time, as you get a lot of people on the internet who, you know. I saw an artist I follow get really grumpy because someone had banged up a load of T-shirts of their work on Teespring. And it was like, what, you thought you would just use somebody else's image. But when she challenged them, they said, oh, you put it on the internet, so it's free.
There's this weird kind of mentality and I don't know where it's come from. I think it kind of evolved out of the generation of people who are just used to downloading stuff for free on the internet.
Yeah.
And they've done it for so long that they just think that's how it is. And and if you put something out there on the internet, then you can just take it. I mean, it's a very strange kind of scenario, because at the same time, I've got the situation where I might make something and then another artist might kind of look at that and think, oh, I want to have a go at making that, just for the kind of the artistic process, you know. And or they might take a sample of something that you've done and try and create something new out of it, and you have to kind of weigh up in your mind, is that right or is that wrong, or are they stealing, or are they building on something that I've created? I mean, in a sense, that's where I came from. It's from taking photos that other people have taken and making animations out of them.
Mm.
So it feels a little bit hypocritical for me to...
To then... Yeah, it's all...
It comes down to if people are making money out of it. If people are making money out of something that I've made...
Yeah.
And they haven't put any effort into it themselves to kind of modify it enough, then I'd kind of had words with them. But
yeah, it's frustrating, because we do live in this more cut and paste, more like I made hip hop for a decade, you know, and we stole. Me and Pip didn't, really. We cleared, we asked people. It took us like 2 years to convince Radiohead to let us use them and stuff. But, you know, some of the work you made couldn't have existed if it hadn't have been for that.
Yeah, and I've got the additional thing now where I might see an advert that has a style very similar to mine, but I can't really complain because I've been doing this for so long now that I've just become a part of the culture, you know? It's like a cultural reference rather than a direct reference. I mean, it's like people saying, hey, you do stuff like Terry Gilliam. And if Terry Gilliam saw my stuff, I think, oh, he's ripping me off. But, I mean, it's just the style that I choose to use in the end.
Yeah, but it's iteration, isn't it? Like, it feels
As long as it's evident that you're building out of it, rather than just straight reproducing it.
I think, in America, they have fair use on copyright.
Yeah, and didn't they try and do something like that to our copyright as well? I remember they were trying to add something in the copyright law so that you're allowed to do something if it's a parody, but you'd have to prove that it's actually funny.
Yeah, let's just prove subjective things. But like fair use, for anyone listening who doesn't know, is basically the way American TV and now YouTubers and stuff can use copyrighted material as long as it's transformative, satirical, as long as it's adding to the work. So you can't just upload the Avengers movie to YouTube, but if you were to upload clips of the Avengers while you were doing a review of it, that you should be able to use that copyright under fair use. It doesn't always work. Some companies are more litigant than others.
Yeah, but I mean, when it comes down to it, if you've got enough money, you can just sue anyone, and there's not much they can do about it.
Oh, I'm suing people left, right, and centre. you used the 124 beat per minute. That's my tempo. It's not my tempo at all. I've got my own special tempo.
I've got a special tempo. It's what is it? It's because when you're animating, it really helps if the music you use, the beats line up on that frames of animation.
You've got frames per second, and we're using beats per minute.
What I find now is that when I'm making music, I specifically choose tempos that I know will line up really nicely with the frames per second.
It's a restriction, but it's a nice restriction, if you know what I mean.
Well, I guess it's kind of lazy, because sometimes I'll be doing a tune and think, oh, it'd sound so much better if it's just a little bit faster, but I know it'd be a real pain in the ass.
But you've sort of touched on that already, that there's a certain amount of, you call it laziness, but...
Well, you could call it efficiency.
Literally the word I was going to use. To do the amount of work.
Creative efficiency, yeah. Because, I mean, I have to churn stuff out quite quickly or I'll get bored with it. So like a 3-minute video typically takes me like a month to 2 months to make. And if it took any longer than that, I probably wouldn't even start it.
But then you also have some walls put in front of you by the software and by computing. Like is it Billions? The video with all the
rabbits.
I can't imagine how your computer was very happy
with
you. Yeah,
it's funny because over the years, I mean, when I started, I dread to think about how crap my first computer was. And of course, After Effects was always crashing and stuff. So over the years, I've got better and better computers. And it just seems like the more RAM I throw at it, the more I just demand... out of the software, so I never end up kind of benefiting.
You never
from
progress.
It.
Like you never feel like it's
just a thing where you think, wow, this can do so much more now. Let's just make it do.
So I'm
much
going
more.
To make it do so much more. This is a really funny thing. Like the technology is meant to like free us, yet it just causes all the same problems.
Ah, shit, sorry. I just got to...
I'll pause that, or are you hanging up?
Well, I'm all right. I just got to switch Skype off. I forgot I had it on.
Okay. The modern technology still uses Skype, though.
Yeah. Oh, man. I want to use something else. I really want to. But all the other chat programs now, they seem to require you have a like a smartphone or something.
You could use something... I'll edit, Dan. Remember to edit this. We don't need...
And then we rambled about Skype and Discord for an inordinate period of time. Skip to the end.
There's adverts in Skype. It confuses me.
There wasn't an old version. I haven't seen them on the version I'm on at the moment.
I've not used it in a while. There's adverts on everything.
Do you, yeah.
Actually, to bring it back, YouTube... Do you put ads on your stuff now? Because you didn't used to.
I didn't used to. And it's weird because I remember a time, long before the adverts ever appeared on YouTube, I'd noticed them, some other video websites using these pop-up adverts on their videos. And I'd think, man, that's a terrible idea. No one's going to watch a video if an advert pops up.
I think adverts on video in general, it's just been a war of attrition. Like, I think eventually, it's not that we've accepted them because of the idea of, well, it's paying the creators or it's funding the website. It's like, they just exist now.
I think that's it. And I mean, I talked about this on Twitter recently where because I went to a meeting with the people at YouTube years ago where they mentioned that they were thinking about doing adverts.
Back when you could actually talk to a human YouTube.
Yeah, back in the good old days when they were actually interested in listening to me. And I just thought, wow, that's a terrible idea, man. If an advert popped up on anything, I'd immediately shut it down because I just hate adverts that much. But they just did it. And people just dealt with it.
Eventually, everyone just, well, this is just
and,
the way it
and
is.
Yeah, and after a while...
I get used to hitting the skip button now.
And then after a while, I just thought, well, I've got videos now with millions of views. How much money am I missing out on here?
Sadly, not as much as people think.
No, but, I couldn't live off it. But it's still, like, a bit of money. And if people are happy to have adverts pop up, and as long as... you have the option of ad blocking them, then
well, that's
I don't
the thing,
really
yeah.
Care.
If you're not happy, you can just block them anyway. Mm. But that it kind of links into like how you pay for your own art because the stuff, a vast majority of your stuff on YouTube isn't commercial work. Yet that non-commercial, you could. I don't know whether you'd call it art or not. I'd call it art.
I'd call a lot of things art.
Yeah. There's like this whimsy and I don't know this because it's not just, they're not just funny videos, you know, like Cycles.
Yeah.
So Cycles is...
Teddy bears invading
is
Worthing.
It's Worthing. Yeah. Because it's like, because you did live around Brighton.
Yeah. I used to live in Brighton. Then I moved to Worthing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I thought
seaside
I'd see
town and cars going down a street and people walking and it loops till the point where you've got giant Star Wars walkers made out of teddy bears attacking the town. But it's like there's something in that repetition, that unexpected, like whimsy is the word I used a minute ago.
Well,
I want to use it again because it makes me sound clever.
Yeah, I mean, you can attach kind of meaning and stuff to things quite easily, even if nothing was intended more than just something funny to look at.
Mm.
But I'd class it all as being artistic in the end. If it's art is just, it's just pulling something out of your head and putting it into somebody else's. It's giving someone an alternative view of the world or telling a story.
You talked in something. I'm really bad at referencing people, so I'm just stealing other people's. I'm just plagiarizing other people's podcasts and interviews at this point. But you talk about a video, "Welcome to Kitty City," where you made this worm-like Caterpillar cat, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then you, once you've made it, you were like, I wonder where he's just come from.
Yeah.
You just like, you ask yourself the question and it leads to...
Yeah. Well, this is where a lot of my stuff, it evolves out of this, just a simple thing. And suddenly I have to build a world for it to exist in, kind of logically speaking.
Yeah, it's odd because like when I'm creating, I air quote a lot, but when I'm creating, the question I'm often asking myself is, what am I trying to say? Whereas I find it fascinating that you get to ask the question, what is he trying to say? I've created this thing, yet what is he trying to do? What is he trying to say? Where is he
going?
Yeah,
it's interesting you say that, because I always have this feeling that a lot of the stuff I make is making itself in some way. And all I'm doing is just moving the pieces into the correct positions.
Yeah.
Because there's only one correct... It's like a jigsaw puzzle. You have to put the pieces in the right place or it won't work. So I just feel like I'm building something which couldn't exist in any other form. And in that sense, it's just making itself.
One of those famous, like, actually skilled sculptor people. I cannot remember who, but...
Finding the sculpture inside a block of marble.
Inside.
Yeah. That's. I feel like that to a certain extent.
Michelangelo. Let's say.
Yeah, I think it
Donatello.
Is.
Donatello. Raphael was the best one with the spikes.
And I mean, I'm probably downplaying my own contribution to the whole creative process a bit.
But is that because it comes naturally?
Yeah, you always take it for granted if it's a kind of an innate thing in your head. I don't know.
Do you ever do the thing where you feel like you've not done enough work for something?
Oh, God,
yeah. Even though it's already done and good.
I've got a phrase for it which is TDP, which stands for That'll Do Pig, which is a quote from
Babe,
where the farmer looks down at the pig and says, That'll do pig. And that's what I have to say to myself if finished enough that I can stop working on it, because you could just keep working on it forever and ever.
This quote comes up a lot, but all art is abandoned. I don't know who said it, but like,
well, it's funny because you think of it as abandoned, and yet once you've put it out there, it's kind of like almost like the audience makes it into something else, something beyond your control.
I always find it fascinating with live bands. Like, you listen to an album 50 times and you know how that song goes. Then you go see the band and it's subtly different. And those subtle differences, like, they might have shortened a breakdown or extended a bit or whatever, because once they were on that stage and probably playing that song far more times than they ever did when they recorded it, it was like suddenly, oh, this is how this song should be. Whereas if you listen to a band's first album, generally how they play it live is how the album sounds, because it's they were playing those songs for however long before they got signed, etc. But second album, that's the bit where you've got 18 months to write another album, done it, and then listen to what they're playing live a year later, and it's like, oh, this is how the album should have sounded. Shit. I think that's why so many second albums aren't quite as good.
Yeah, there is something to that.
Yeah, but I think there's problems with expectations. And that's, I suppose that...
Well, in some sense, like, everything, every new piece you create has evolved out of the thing that came before it anyway. So it almost is like your entire body of work is just one piece of art that's been evolving over time.
Yeah.
And looking at it at any particular point is just like taking a slice through it at that moment.
Do you ever get the thing where you release something new and you feel like it's the best you've ever done, and then get that mild annoyance that, why is everyone still watching that video? Watch this one.
Well, I've always had this thing where old stuff just looks really embarrassing, And I've had this since I was a kid.
I suppose there's technological reasons as well, because of the ability to capture video.
Yeah, but I mean, even when I was growing up, I mean, I don't have any stuff I drew when I was a kid, just because like a year later, I'd be that much better at drawing that it would look crap and I'd throw it away, throw the old stuff away. So yeah, I mean, some of my old videos I do kind of cringe a bit.
Yeah. I have it, like there's stuff off me and Pip's first album that's still played on the radio and it's cringeworthy to me. Like, if I knew then what I know now, we probably never would have been signed, but...
I think though as well that what you have to realise is that other people are hearing a completely different thing than what you are.
Yeah.
Because you've made it, you've crafted every kind of molecule of that thing, and you know it inside out, and you knew it since before you made it because it is already in your head. So you've got such a weird kind of other context to experience it than other people do, and other people just hear it how they want to hear it.
And you have that double whammy of, like, it's not only what you intended, it is also what you were living through.
Oh, right, yeah. You know,
like, each of the albums me and Pip did all relate to different phases, generally relationships. And it's like, yeah, when someone's telling me, oh, I love that song, it's so uplifting and that, and I'm thinking, man, I was in a bad place. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, because you'll have that as an artist, but you'd also have that as the audience. The time you're living in when you enjoyed something is always going to remind you of that. I mean, there's certain music that I hear that always reminds me of whatever I was doing at the time, because I'd always have it on in the background or whatever.
That environment, like, you live alone and you make something that's very time consuming. So you spend a lot of time staring at a screen. I don't want to use the word isolation because it sounds darker than it should be.
Well, the screen is like a window into like this infinite universe. Which also has like the internet attached to it. So I never really feel that isolated. In fact, I've gone out of my way to live somewhere that's as isolated as I could find.
You are out of the way.
Just because I don't want any of the outside world to annoy me while I'm looking through this.
So it's a choice. It's a positive to your work.
Yeah.
So because my laptop that I make music on doesn't connect to the internet. I've never put in the password. I was really annoyed, actually, because when I got my last new one, which was a long time ago, I updated it from my old one, and that one did connect to the internet. So I had to go through and delete all the... Because it kind of copied it all across. But yeah, so if I want to use the internet, because I've got a phone and stuff, I'll just do it that way. If I need to send a file, I'll copy that on a USB over to my old laptop, which is really weird. I open this old laptop that takes 20 minutes to... I might as well hand crank it to start. But just because I know if I've got access to Twitter while I'm making a beat, while I'm, let's say I'm rendering, and I've only got to wait 3 minutes for it to render, but I'll be off on a Twitter rant. Yeah. Oh, these people! anger!
It is a real time waster, the internet, but it's also how I ingest the world that I live in.
I like it, and as much as I hate it, you know?
I mean, I grew up without the internet, and I remember just sitting around my mate's bedroom and we'd just be like staring at each other thinking, and I know we were both thinking, God, I wish someone would invent the internet.
Just this nebulous idea, like,
yeah.
Oh, God, I'm bored. But all right, talking about time filling, you've done a bit of Twitch streaming.
Oh yeah, I had a little dabble
a couple of years
that.
Ago now.
Yeah,
which would, like you kind of showed the creative side.
Yeah, because I mean, I am a bit of a hermit at heart, but I do appreciate the value of some human contact, because you after a while you forget how to even talk to other people.
Yeah.
If you don't see them. So I thought, well, that's a good idea. I can interact with my fans and show them how I do stuff.
I've been doing it about 3 years now. I probably do like 30 hours streaming a week, which is probably a little too much. But it's this opportunity to talk to another human, even if they're only there passively.
Yeah. I did it for a bit, and then I stopped just because I kind of felt like I'd said everything that I could say about my creative process. And it's very weird. What I was doing is basically opening up old After Effects projects and to show people how I'd done stuff. Mm. And of course, because of the way I work is like flinging mud at a wall to see what sticks, I'd be opening these old projects and thinking, God, what on earth is going on here? I have no idea.
Hundreds of layers.
It's just a complete mess. So the whole stream would just be me kind of being completely confused about what I was even looking at.
So I've tried to do actual creating stuff on stream.
Yeah.
And it's a little hard because I'm embarrassed.
I've tried that and I found that you can't really take it seriously too much. Because when you're actually creating, the process, for an observer, the process is going to be boring as hell to watch, especially with animation, where you're just tweaking a little keyframe and then watching it over and over and over again, and then tweaking it again, and no one's going to want to watch that.
Because so much of your stuff is rhythmic and looping as well, like... know if a loop works, you can't just watch that once.
I guess there's a real parallel with music making in that, because I've watched people making music.
What you do is
and they're just sitting there listening to the same loop over and over again for like hours. And that's not a process that you really want to be an audience to, I guess.
Yeah, because that's what I find. I like move on far. I move through things far faster than I would, so I end up.
But then if you end up just basically making a kind of tutorial for how to make stuff.
Yeah, they always end up being like copies of something I've done before rather than anything new or iterative. Mm. Like, it's really funny. I've been messing around. I was trying to send a clip to someone of something that happened in a game. Really boring. I was running around in PvP in Destiny and I shot a man in the head. Yeah, I suddenly got 2 kills, and I was like, how did that happen? So I just hit clip on my PlayStation 4, because you can clip things. Hmm. It's constantly recording.
Oh, right.
And then I'm like, I must have spent like 2 hours, like slowing it down, trying to work out, how did I kill a second guy with that one bullet? What's going on? And then as I'm slowing it down, obviously the audio is slowing down, and it's slowing it down in like this sort of, not just... putting the whole thing in slow-mo. It's like playing full speed and then going...
Oh, right.
And then speeding back up. So really odd. And I'm like... Then I'm distracted completely because this noise, like the noise of the game, this like digital sounds and all this. And then I'm off making a beat for it. I couldn't do that on stream. You know, like where the inspiration comes from is often so unrelated, you know.
Yeah. And I guess most of the creative streams that you'll see are going to be people where it's not so much an artistic thing, it's more of a craft type thing. They'll know what they're doing and what they have to do. So you're just watching them do it.
Because I haven't done a creative stream in a couple of months, and I do enjoy them. I enjoy the conversations that come up around them. That's why I'm doing a podcast vaguely about creativity. But my girlfriend just said, well, stop just turning on the stream. Like, pick something you want to do beforehand. Like, pick a song you want to remix, or have a reason what you're trying to create. It doesn't matter if it's good, but then at least you've got a framework for the stream, which gives you a framework for something to people talk about and such and things.
Do people talk to you much in the stream about what you're doing and ask you questions and things?
So, like gaming streams, because that's what I do mostly. Mm. It's fairly chatty. Like, it's a weird one because I don't really suppress the stream in any way. So there's no subjects you can't talk about.
Hey, right.
So we can talk about politics. We do talk about religion.
It's funny that it amazes me that the internet has evolved in a direction where people have thrown away their anonymity. When I first started using the internet, nobody knew who anyone was.
Yeah.
And you could say whatever you want, no matter how offensive it was or outrageous.
Yeah.
You could kind of get away with it. And then things like Facebook appeared and suddenly people are telling the world who they really are.
But is it who they really are or is it who they want you to perceive them to be? Like, you go out for a rad lunch and you take a photo of that rad meal. That's cool and all, but I know for a fact you were eating beans on toast last night.
Well, there's always going to be an aspect of people playing a part, even without the internet.
I suppose as soon as you leave the house, yeah.
But at the same time, there is that grounding sense of yourself that is attached to your real name and what you do and where you live and stuff, which is what people have kind of thrown out there into the world. And I'm always amazed at why people were so quick to give that up just to have a Facebook page or whatever.
I think to a certain extent, there is a bit of the nostalgia thing, the bit of the, oh, I wonder what he's doing now.
Yeah.
So, you, like...
Yeah, that's right, because it all started with that Friends Reunited.
Yeah, you had Friendster and Friends Reunited. And
then there's a few of those MySpace and stuff like that. And then people became the product that they were selling to the world, basically.
Yeah. Oh, God, that phrase. Well, it's my personal brand.
Yeah.
Really? Really? Yeah. Like, what?
And everything is content. Content is a really disparaging word to use
because it's just
anything could be content, no matter how.
Well, I always think of it like ingredients. When you read ingredients, this has got 4 grams of salt content. Like
it's the lowest common denominator, basically for whatever you're producing.
Yeah,
it's the bare minimum that it has to be.
And it's frustrating to me because there's so many people that are making beautiful things, but if you're making animated GIFs, there's plenty of people who make really beautiful geometric evolving GIFs that are inspiring to me, yet someone's going to post that, not the creator themselves, but somebody else is going to come along and grab that and use that as content this will get me some likes for today.
What do they call that when you just all you do is kind of gather stuff that other people have done and curate it yourself?
You got like Pinterest and I suppose Tumblr was that in a certain elements of Tumblr were just collections and they're fascinating, you know, they can lead to inspiration, finding work through those.
Yeah, but it's like, but then the people who curate, it's a bit like there was an argument about that when DJs became a thing back in the day. Remember when celebrity DJs and you just think, they're just playing other people's music.
Mm.
How difficult is that and stuff?
I 100% believe there's a skill involved in DJing.
Well, there's a technical skill of mixing and whatever, but then there is a kind of a creative process in the gathering of the material
to and make that
choosing
choice
which
of,
stuff you're going to play.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, to the amounts of money that were changing hands to book that person.
Yeah.
But it's...
When the person who's gathering this stuff to show people is getting more out of it than the people who are making it. That's a kind of
it's the commoditizing of that name rather than what they're the art that they're going to use, which always confuses me. I always think, I don't know if it's actually true, it always makes me think of Lakeside Shopping Centre in Essex, where I worked in HMV and stuff. When it opened, someone said to me that the Marks and Spencers in there, which was massive, like 2-3 stores of Marks and Spencers, goodness, didn't pay rent.
What?
Yeah, because the people who owned the shopping centre wanted that big name DJ, man. DJ That's Marks and Spencers.
Terrible, isn't it? That is, I mean...
I don't know if that's true, obviously, but
it's similar to how big brands don't pay any tax because they're afraid to ask them to in case they say, oh, we're gonna move somewhere else.
It's so funny. Like I remember Arcadia Group 1 year paid like 1% tax, and well, that's what they agreed to. I was like, no, I don't get to choose. I don't get to negotiate with someone.
It's so wrong.
I haven't actually earned enough money in the last like 3 years to pay tax. So it's going to be, if I like suddenly start earning money because I get off my ass and do some work, I'm going, who am I giving this money to? This is mine. I worked for this. All right, I pay road tax. That counts, doesn't it? That's not even, what is it, a motor vehicle? Don't get distracted by tax, Dan. It happens. But talking about the internet, there's a weird thing with you because of that start with GIFs. Mm. That start, like, there's work of yours that people have seen that they will not know they're yours.
There was a couple of years where I was making these things back in the day, and I mean, I try and put my name on some of them, but it's just a name.
By the time it's compressed and stuff,
So then one day YouTube came along and I just put all these GIFs together into a compilation video and put it out there, and I'd get people saying, oh God, you did that.
Yeah, I saw that on the
But yeah, GIFs were such an ideal format because they were just so easy to spread and you could embed them on any web page. There were so many
different ways of making them as well, because I used to make GIFs in Flash. Mm. So you had those like more vectory GIFs, but then you had you could make Photoshop GIFs or GIMP, which is the free,
that's the Photoshop equivalent open source thing. Yeah,
and like making GIFs in that is so easy. So there's like, which meant that the medium of GIFs could deal with more than just chopping it, like that cutout style photo thing, which then inspires it to become an art form of its own, to the point now where...
Well, it's amazing that they're still around and they're still popular, because the format itself is really quite clunky compared to modern video formats. And
it's hilarious because on Twitter, if you see a GIF, you're not watching a GIF.
Yeah.
You're watching a video.
They've all been... which is crazy, because when I make a GIF for Twitter, I have to make a video first, convert it to a GIF, and then upload it to Twitter for them to convert it back again, which is a bit of a strange way of doing things. But it's just one of those things that won't die, I think, because the format itself requires this endlessly looping image, which is just a thing that people want. And I think that's valuable. I think one of the reasons it is so valuable on the internet is because the internet is inherently static. It's just a page of words, and you don't want the words to be moving around because you wouldn't
really
be able to read them.
And isn't it really the last few years that we've started having the bandwidth to do more immersive websites? But we've got to that point now where we understand the language of the internet as a more static thing. So
you need to have something moving to convey emotion or whatever, but at the same time, it can't just keep moving and changing forever, or you'd have to just sit there watching it forever. So it's just this simple loop that gives a visual message, and it adds so much more to
things. I find it really telling on that emotion thing, like literal on Twitch, you have emotes and each channel, like partner channels, and now with affiliates, so smaller channels can have their own emotes that if you're paying that channel the bucks, you can use that anywhere on Twitch. But there are also GIF emotes, and they're 112 by 112 pixels. They're tiny, and Twitch makes them even smaller when they're in chat. Yet, like, we can express an emotion, whether it be a static image or animated, in a tiny amount of pixels, at the same time as people are spending thousands of pounds on 4K TVs. And, like, it is amazing to me. Like, the human experience can be expressed in the simplest. But I suppose if you draw two dots and a line, you can show any human emotion.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's one of those things that had to exist, basically. You didn't have smileys for a long time. And
hieroglyphics, mate. That's all they were. Just Egyptian emoji.
Yeah. But yeah, having a conversation on the internet, you just have to have a way of saying, I'm being a bit sarcastic here.
what I find funny with the internet as well is that, like, what is a necessity, like, for shorthand with obviously lots of, like, BRB or whatever, those things spring up and become part of our language. Like, someone actually said lol. You're not laughing, so you're lying. You're lying. And then they got confused as to what I was saying. But almost to the point they didn't know that lol meant laugh out loud. It was like genuine. Yeah. But then, like, little smileys, little punctuation smileys, expanded to, like, full on a SCSI. I don't know how you say that. A SCSI.
I don't even know what that is.
It's the text. ASCSI.
ASCII.
ASCII.
That's how I pronounce it. But I don't know if that's how you say it.
People make full on.
Oh yeah, like little
ASCII art, to the point of, like, full on ASCII art pornography, actually animated. It's bizarre, man. It's absolutely, like, hardcore porn animated in, and it's like,
what?
You spent thousands of hours doing this to, like, these people are making, like, HD. Like, crazy developed. It's like that skill and time and mastery into making porn out of letters. It just fascinates me that.
Well, I can see that. I mean, there's always a thing when you're an artist, and I mean, I get this as well, where the limitations they force you to be more creative. So they inspire you in a sense.
It's something that's come up repeatedly in this, like how people have gravitated towards things that limit them. So the limitations becoming, like, gravitating towards the limitations. So Chipsil, the chiptune artist, uses a Game Boy to create her music. You know, there's software called LSDJ that she uses, and she's limited by not only what the software can do, but the control mechanism of that. And that's where she started. And now she's spent a bit more money and got bigger things, yet she's built a synthesizer that's super limiting out of modular synthesis. And it's interesting how even now she's got the ability to have everything she could ever want. What she wants is something limiting. But that helps her work harder and find her own sound, I suppose.
Yeah. And I mean, I use that a lot in what I do, where I'll just find a particular piece of footage or a photo, and I'll just think, man, could I actually make a whole video out of just that thing? Just,
you did that in Because, though.
Yeah.
That's just your face.
Just a picture of my face. And it was the challenge of it, you know, to just see how far I could, what kind of world I could create out of such a simple thing.
It is funny, actually, because that you use your one face to make someone in your comments said a religion. You could make a religion out of this. Whoever said that in the comments, I know you're listening. But yeah, it's like take from your face to this ascension, like it creates this little jellyfish.
It's like I wanted to build a whole universe out of this, because it's that idea of the universe being built from such simple components. And there are just so many of them that complexity just emerges. And yeah, so I just wanted to visualize that in a kind of a ridiculous way.
Yeah. But it works, you know, like to be able to do that. And actually makes a jump to the music as well.
Oh, right.
Because the music in that is so fitting. It is so perfect for what you've done. That I don't think that the music must have existed first, surely.
Oh, yeah. The music always exists first.
Because I can't imagine making something like that and then having to try to pair the music.
No. How it works is, I mean, the music always comes first. And I mean, sometimes I'll have the music track for like years before a video spawns from it, and but the video, the visuals are totally a reaction to the music. So whatever the story the music goes on, whatever the atmosphere it creates, that's what will inspire the visuals. And so it becomes like almost like a storyboard for the video. And of course, you've got the beats and the rhythm that creates a framework for the actual animation. So, yeah.
And it's just funny because the music is constantly ascending. You know, it's just moving up and up and up and up and up. And I find it, because that's what you're doing until this point where you reach the Teletubbies baby son moment of your face.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's something that's, maybe if anyone who knows your work might not realize that that's you making that music. You are, although you'd probably, from what I'm gathering here, you'll play down your musical ability. You know, you're just making a thing that you need almost.
Music, I mean, it's always been a bit of a hobby for me. I mean, I've been making music for a long time before I even started doing animation. But I've never had any kind of training or bothered to learn any instruments.
Yeah.
So it's basically just me getting some music software and playing around with it. And I mean, before I had computers, I was using drum machines to make these interesting drum patterns and loops and stuff. But yeah, I never feel like I'm a musician or anything.
But like, I guarantee, like, you play some of... Like, I'm not very musical for a musician. I can't read music. I know the odd scale. I know what keys to press with my hands. But, like, generally, I don't know the language of music. I know the what sounds good to me
thing. Well, that's what I get. I mean, when I'm making an animation, I know how to do stuff, and I know how to tell a story and animate stuff. But with music, it's more like I'm just experimenting and hammering it until it's a nice shape. And I don't really know what I'm doing, but I'll throw a load of notes together, and by chance, they might sound good.
It's funny though, because that by chanceness is that. Oh, it was really hard. It's like winning the lottery. Some of those chord changes are like, how the fuck did... What? You know, like, to me,
Well, it comes back to that, what I was saying earlier about my stuff making itself. Because I feel like when I've made something, that's the only way it could possibly exist. If it wasn't like that, it would sound wrong or it'd look wrong. So I'm just putting the pieces together in the form that it has to be in.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's still based on my particular taste. So I guess that's where my artistic comes into it.
your ear, your
because,
eye.
Because some people listen to my stuff and they hate it. And it's, I'm fine with that. Because
there's definitely some, like, I can, it's funny, like, although we haven't talked about it, like, you did a thing for Walmart, the fashion.
Oh, yeah. Thing.
And I, that seeing that video, it's very different. It's definitely a more commercial piece.
Mm.
But I want to know how that kid pitched Syriac to whoever was paying for it. Like, there's no way he could have shown them, like, the work. Or if he did, he's got it muted because some of those chords are going to freak the like.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't of course imagine. I wasn't making that music.
But like the not the music the in that, but like when he's trying to sell.
I think what helps
you to whoever's paying.
I think
for
it's
it.
From probably that stemmed more from the music videos I've done.
I suppose yeah, the Bonobo,
like the Bonobo one.
Bonobo. I can never. It's Bonobo. Bonobo.
I think so.
I feel like David Attenborough could tell us.
Yeah,
he would know. But like music videos, you've done Bonobo. You did the Eskimo. One the on the New York streets did the Meow the Jewels run the Jewels thing.
Yeah, that's weird.
The Block Party one.
Oh yeah,
the Block Party one's awesome because it is found footage.
That was so funny when because they asked me to make that video and I just thought, oh god, because one of their stipulations was that they had to appear in it.
Mm.
And I just thought, oh man, does that mean I'm gonna have to film these them. Guys and kind of orchestrate them and stuff. And then I was looking at some of their old videos and I thought, well, these are a bit kind of, I would have done
they're
these.
Pretty traditional.
Yeah, I just couldn't help looking at them and thinking, what would I have done with this footage? I'm sure I'd have done something a bit more interesting than just these guys playing their instruments in a room. And then I thought, man, I wonder if I could sell this idea to them of just using all their old videos and just making them into a new video.
It's a weirdly thing as well because of them splitting up so soon afterwards. It's almost like a compendium of
all their greatest hits before they disappear. It worked out in the end. And again, it's that thing of limiting yourself, like, especially because all the footage they sent me was so, like, ropey. Mm. Like they were sending me just really compressed videos because it's all they had and stuff.
Oh, yeah, like, me and Pip, we don't have a HD version of the video most people have seen.
Mm. Like, yeah, I don't have HD versions of most of my videos because HD wasn't a thing.
Didn't exist.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, looping all the way back, you've done a lot. Like, we listed those videos, Flying Lotus on top of that, and then you did a few spoof adverts for the It Crowd.
Oh.
You did some video shorts for Showtime, and like,
yeah, I forget how much I've done over the years. It's weird because I get people saying to me, oh, I've grew up watching your stuff, and I think, god, I've only been doing it for a little while, haven't
I? The stuff I noted down were the Run the Jewels, Bonobo, Flying Lotus, Block Party, Eskimo videos, It Crowd spoof ads, E4 idents, Adult Swim idents, Showtime idents.
Yes, Showtime.
And that's just stuff I knew. There's other music videos, there's a hell of a lot more.
Yeah, idents. There's loads of adverts and things I've done.
There's idents for there's a Spanish TV ad for like an opticians.
Yeah.
And it's so weird because it's like musically so different to everything of yours because it's like jovial, almost like Spanish stock music, but like it's so fitting as well.
Yeah.
But weirdly, that stuff feels like the gifts you would have been known for.
Well, that was literally was the gifts because what had happened with that one was that was after I'd put my compilation video on YouTube of all my gifts and I was getting emails from ad agencies and TV companies basically saying, yeah, we really like that bit and that bit. Can we take that one and we'll have that one? They were using it like a library of ideas, kind of.
But that's the thing. Like, how does it feel to take something you're just noodling around to make people laugh in the office?
Mm.
And then you're making, like, work. Like, actual work that million, if not billion-dollar companies are willing to use to represent them. It's crazy when you think about it.
And I've never got used to it. I'll tell you, I mean, when I think back of the days when I'm doing stuff for Coca-Cola or whoever, I was living in this bedsit on Brighton Seafront, which was just one room, which was my bedroom and my living room and my wardrobe. So everything I owned was just scattered all over.
Your floor drove.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And I was thinking, man, if they saw me in this working environment, I don't know what they'd think.
Yeah, it freaks me out. When a company, I can't say their name, sadly, approached me the other day, and I'd never heard of them. Mm. So I was just chatting away. And then they asked me to do something, and I emailed somebody in the games industry. What do you know about these guys? Oh, yeah. No, they just floated for $1 billion. And all of them were like, what the fuck? And it's like, suddenly, when they're trying to arrange this meeting and I'm trying to get them to meet me in a Pret, which is classy. I think Pret is the top end of my level of class. And it's like suddenly they're saying, oh, no, we should really go to Selfridges. Not Selfridges, there's a place near there, not Harrod's. Yeah. There's a place.
See, this is
Fortnum and Mason. They wanted to meet me in this cafe near Fortnum and Mason. I was like, all right, yeah.
I've made a real effort over the years to ensure that I never actually meet any of my clients if I can get away with it.
Which, again, is the wonder of the internet.
Yeah.
You can be in a bedsit in Brighton.
I do whole jobs where I only ever email the people that I'm working for.
But where we are now, obviously, with your glass tables and shiny, it's chrome everywhere. It's very modern and businesslike. And there's lots of secretaries and underlings walking past.
Yeah, God, my multi-million dollar business I have here.
But I don't, you know what, I think we've covered everything. So, there it is. Syriac, what a dude, man. Really good conversation. I've actually cut off a bit of the end of the conversation where we ramble about the Binding of Isaac for a bit, but Andrea has convinced me that people need to hear it. She loves that game. I love that game. Syriac loves that game. So at the end of this section, I'm just going to whack the 4 minutes of us talking roguelikes on the end for you. But yeah, I hope genuinely you enjoyed that. I certainly did. It was definitely worth my time driving up to the north. I actually really like driving. It's good for my brain. You know, I have to concentrate, but I don't concentrate. I get ideas, you know, and not like bad ideas. Not like voices in your head kill all the people ideas. More like creative ones. And that's kind of my job, isn't it? Don't forget to check out Syriac's work. Don't forget to hit me up on Twitter. If you've got any questions and ideas for other guests, drop by the Patreon, patreon.com/Daniel Sack. If you want to give the podcast a little bit of support, tweet, retweet, do all those things. You know, thank you in advance for spreading the good word. And as you well know, I'm not too proud to beg. And I'll see you next week. Wait, no, I didn't tell you about next week's guest. Next week's guest, YouTuber, deep philosophical shenanigans, creativity, everything, all in a big blender. You're going to enjoy it. Right. On to that chat about Isaac. See you later. Actually, did you play Binding of Isaac as well?
Oh, yeah.
Do you still play it a lot?
A lot, yeah, every day.
It's weird. There's something in Isaac that is repetition, because it's a roguelike, a run takes 40 minutes at most, and then you just do another run.
Mm.
But each run evolves so differently.
Yeah, it's what keeps me playing it. It's like you just never know what you're going to get.
When you end up in a game-breaking run where you've got these multicolor giant tears and you picked up rubber cement so they're bouncing everywhere. Yeah. It's funny because
it just ties back to everything I love and everything I create. It's all just you start with something so simple, and it just entropy takes over, and by the end it's just a chaos of...
I'm not going to explain what Binding of Isaac is to anyone listening. If you know, you know. If you don't, Google it. Google, like, Richard Hammer or one of those streamers.
God, yeah, let me see how long I've been playing that game.
But there's... You start with very tiny... I'm going to call them bullets, but they're not... I don't want to spoil anything for you.
Look at that, man.
Mate!
That's a silly amount of time to be spending playing a game.
But you start with these very simple bullets, and then over time they evolve by each thing you pick up, and it's beautiful. It's just downright beautiful.
And everything you pick up can have a different effect, but different effects can synergize in different ways to create a totally different new effect.
So you've got 2,750 hours.
Yeah, on Steam. That's quite a lot.
So I've passed 2,000 hours on Steam. But that doesn't account for PlayStation.
Oh, dear.
PlayStation Vita.
You're ahead of me, are you?
I reckon we're a bit about equal. And my girlfriend's PlayStation, because she plays it.
Oh, right. So God. It's addictive, isn't it?
I've got to be up there. I stopped playing for a long while, and I deleted my save file just to start again.
Because after a while, I've found that... You want to know what it's like to start from the beginning to see if it... You think, am I really this good at the game, or is it just because I've unlocked all the good stuff?
Yeah. It's funny, because there is another... So we're on, Afterbirth Plus now. Mm. There is another... They did announce...
Oh, there's a new DLC, which is...
It's not Antibirth, because that was a mod.
Well, they're adapting that to...
DLC is going
to
be?
So I think they might add... They'll have to change some bits of it, and they'll probably want to add some more stuff themselves.
The item bloat at this point.
It's kind of... It's almost too much, isn't it?
There's this point where... Like,
there's a lot of items that maybe do similar things, and... Yeah.
It's funny, the last thing you unlocked was the blanket. And obviously the blanket is just Holy Mantle, but only for boss rooms.
Mm.
And it's like, but we've got Holy Mantle. You know, and we've got the little, what's it called? Trinket that gives you Holy Mantle for one hit per floor. And it's just like, I get it. But then they'll do stuff like the ones where your tears become your eyes. And they're like pool balls.
They're bouncing around off each other.
Like, that's actually something different. But we're just talking about Isaac. Some point before now, we will have faded out. Just because I'm not built like this.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.